The State Committee on State and Local Government will come to order. Today is Monday, January 14th, and I would just like to welcome the members today. I'm Senator Sandy Pappas, the chair of the committee, and Senator Chris Eaton is the vice chair of the committee, and our lead Republican is
Dan Hall,
right.
He's not here.
Oh, we have to wait till our lead Republican arrives. So.
Really?
Talk among yourselves. No, I'm kidding. I thought that maybe before we'll give another few minutes for members to arrive, and I wanted to point out something in your packet, which is a handout called Committee Procedures, and this is just a little reminder of how we'd like to conduct the committee, and I think how probably most committee chairs want to conduct the committee. Begin at our regularly scheduled times. And notify us if you're going to be absent so that we can make sure you're excused. Address your questions through the chair. Any handouts that you have for any bills that you might have, make sure our committee administrator gets them in advance of the hearing. Plus, in addition, we prefer that oral amendments, even if it's during the hearing, ideally should be written. Where is Taurus Ray sit? I can't see anybody's name thing.
Here you are.
Over there. That would be helpful if I that. We have a little save folder, which is typical. And if you do have a request for a hearing, be sure you submit a request to the committee administrator. And then just an encouragement to try to be very subtle with your cell phones or your iPads or whatever, so it's not disruptive of what we're doing in the committee or disrespectful to any of the witnesses. And beverages are permitted, but food you can eat over at the side table if you need to eat something in the afternoon. It's usually more an issue with lunchtime. And then a little information about request for interim per diem and expense reimbursements, which I don't even know if we're going to have since our budget's in such bad shape. So we have a few more members here, so why don't we start with introducing the members and the staff that's at the table. Let's do that as well. So as I mentioned, I'm to anyone who might not know me, since I've been around this place for like decades, literally decades, I'm Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul, and I live right downtown, 10-minute walk. The Capitol's in my district, and I represent neighborhoods to the north, the west, and the south of downtown. So, and welcome. And I've actually served on this committee over the years and on the division, but this is the first time I've had the opportunity to chair it. So I'm looking forward to all the exciting state and local government issues that we have to deal with. Okay, let's go to Cara. Okay.
I'm Cara Josephson, committee administrator for state and local.
I'm Katie Gasper, legislative assistant.
I'm Patricia Torres Ray, and I represent District 63. Which is Southeast Minneapolis and part of Richfield. This is my third term in the Senate. I'm happy to be back in this committee. I serve in this committee during the last 2 years, and we had some wonderful discussions, didn't we, Senator Thompson?
Indeed.
Senator Godwin. It was actually a very exciting committee, so I'm looking forward to the next few years with you, Madam Chair.
I'm Barb Goodwin, and this is my second term. I represent all of Columbia Heights, all of Ridley, all of New Brighton, all of St. Anthony Village, and a piece of Spring Lake Park.
Dave Thompson, and I got Lakeville. I live in Lakeville, and then my district includes Farmington and a large part of more rural Dakota County right down to the Rice County line, and this is my second term.
I'm Senator Kevin Dahl, Northfield, Senate District 20, which includes Northfield, Belle Plaine, New Prague, all the way to Le Sueur, and several other communities in between. And this is the first time that I've been on the state and local committee.
Karen Housley, I represent Senate District 39, which is Forest Lake, goes east to Stillwater, south all along the St. Croix River down to St. Mary's Point, where I live, and I'm almost the last house in the district.
I'm Brandon Peterson. I represent Senate District 35, which is the cities of Anoka, Ramsey, Andover, and Northwest Coon Rapids. This is my first time serving on state and local government.
And I'm Bev Scalzi. I'm representing a new district, Senate District 42, and I served on the local government committee in the House for four terms, And so this was one of my first requests in the Senate. I represent the cities of Little Canada, Vadnais Heights, Gem Lake, part of Roseville, all of Shoreview, all of Moundsview and Arden Hills. These are seven suburban communities, somewhere between 7 and 10 miles north of here. My real passion is local government. I served 6 terms on the Little Canada City Council before I came to the State House.
Hi, I'm Alice Johnson. I live in Spring Lake Park, represent District 37, which includes basically the whole city of Blaine, the eastern part of Coon Rapids, and the other half of Spring Lake Park that Barb Goodwin represents. I've never been on the state and local government committee in the time that I was at the House, and I'm looking forward to being a part of this group. Thank you.
I'm Bruce Anderson, represent Senate District, the new Senate District 29, and I'm a freshman here in the Senate. Been on state and local government prior to this in the House. I serve all of Wright County, which includes the county seat of Buffalo and 12 other cities and 18 townships.
And join the group of former House members that are over here. There's a lot of us.
There are a few of them.
A lot of us.
Four of us right here in a row.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alexis Stangle. I usually go by Lexi. I'm the Senate counsel assigned to this committee, and I'll be doing the local government issues.
I'm Chris Eaton. I represent Brooklyn Center in the southern half of Brooklyn Park, Senate District 40. I was here last year, and I'm glad to be back.
I'm Stephanie James, Senate Counsel. I'll be handling the state government and veterans issues for this committee, and this is my second year staffing this committee.
We're not such a huge group in the audience, so why don't we just quickly introduce people who are at the table in the audience.
My name's Ryan Majerus. I'm for Senate Majority Research.
Showing on my Senate page.
Brian Wells, LA for Kevin Dahl.
Charlie Vanderity with Metro Cities.
I'm Bo Bernson from the Association of Minnesota Counties.
John Thorson with AFSCME Council 5.
I'm Ann Litzer with the League of Minnesota Cities.
Okay. Okay.
Sheila Van with the Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Sandy Naren with Meserly and Kramer.
Team Ranieri, City of Minneapolis.
Linda McDonald, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
James Vogley, Builders Association of the Twin Cities.
Peter Coyle with Larkin Hoffman, who represent the Builders Association of the Twin Cities.
Jean Lee, Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium, and being that I hear that there's some veterans issues, I also do some work with the Asian Veterans Organization.
I'm John Kropik with the American Council of Engineering Companies.
Elizabeth Emerson with Gough Public.
Amanda Dermerger, Department of Natural Resources.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. First thing we're going to do today is, and welcome everyone to the committee, is the overview of committee jurisdiction by both of our councils, Ms. James and Ms. Stangle. And you want to, we can all hear you better.
Nope. Down there. You're cool.
In your packet, there is a list of our jurisdiction. You're just going to go over it for us so we know.
The jurisdiction list has a paragraph. Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair and members. The jurisdiction list at the top has a paragraph, and this paragraph outlines the kinds of issues that come before this group. And then below are a list of agencies. We'll start with the list of topics. This committee has jurisdiction over any bills that create or change agencies, state agencies, any that that result in the reorganization of state agencies or move powers or duties of an agency from one to another. This committee also has jurisdiction over bills that relate to state administrative services, which is administrative hearings, contested case proceedings in the Office of Administrative Hearings, that kind of thing. The next item on the list is rulemaking. Any bills that involve rulemaking are the jurisdiction of this committee. State employee compensation, that includes benefits and health care and all components of compensation are the jurisdiction of this committee. Public employee labor relations contracts, the public labor union contracts will come before this committee. Pensions and retirement for a variety of state employees. Gaming, lotteries, paramutual wagering are the jurisdiction of this committee. Anything that changes the structure of the legislature, and then veterans and military affairs. And then I'll let Lexi describe the local government component.
And as Steph mentioned, and you probably have heard more than once by now, we'll be sort of dividing the workload. So if you have issues or questions about state government, you can ask Steph, and I'll be taking all the local government issues. So just to wrap up, the local government jurisdiction is over all bills relating to powers of local and metropolitan government units. There should be a memo in your packet from me. It's called Local Government Jurisdiction. It's just a couple of short bullet point lists, and this just picks out all of the local government entities from the big jurisdiction list, just so you can see where those things fall. And it wasn't our intention to go through the whole list and read them, but if you have any questions about any of them, we're happy to answer them.
Why don't you just maybe point out a few things, though, that maybe have had attention paid to them in the past? I actually want to comment that the jurisdiction of this committee is actually quite large, because I've been in situations where there's been a state government committee, a local government committee, a metropolitan committee, a veterans affairs committee, and a gambling committee. So I think that's like five committees. So I don't know how much we're going to be able to get to of those. It depends on you all, what kind of bills you offer. But where have you seen, like in the past couple of years, I know both of you are pretty new, most of the action going on?
Rulemaking is always a topic in a lot of bills.
So bills come to us to go over the rulemaking process procedure.
That's right. They may otherwise be not something that's subject matter for this committee, but there may be a provision that exempts someone from rulemaking, for example, and that would come here. Creation of boards is another area that's that we see quite a few bills for this committee. Obviously, last year, gaming, paramutual wagering were a big topic. And I know that Running Aces is in the news with some issues that it may have this year. The Capital Restoration Project is an item that the governor has identified as being a priority. And the CAP board, the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, is listed here as part of the jurisdiction of this committee. So it's likely that this committee would have a role in.
But the CAP board is not really the entity that's really overlooking the remodeling of the Capitol.
There's a
committee that does that?
Madam Chair, there's actually several organizations that are identified in the Capital Restoration Bill, one of which is the CAP board. Mm-hmm. So they definitely have a role in approving the plans for that. Mm-hmm. But you're right that there are other organizations too. What else? Retirement, every year every other year, there's a pension bill that will tweak the retirement system in some way that would come before this committee.
And some of us here are serving on the Pension Commission. I know Senator Goodwin is, I am, you are, Senator Thompson, are serving on the Pension Commission. You are too as well. So I think that is being appointed as we speak. I think it was appointed today from the Senate. And as soon as it's appointed from the House, then there'll be Pension Commission meetings that will start.
And, Madam Chair, one other item is the Compensation Council. Appointments to that council will be by October 1st and then by May 1st of the next odd-numbered year. Compensation Council will be submitting recommendations for compensation for constitutional officers and members of the legislature and Supreme Court justices, judges, and heads of agencies.
Is that an ongoing council, or was that a new? entity?
It's an ongoing council, but there will be new appointments by October.
And it's been pretty stagnant, I think.
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair. I believe they did not meet in the last biennium.
Where is that on your list?
The Compensation Council.
Oh, I see it.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Yes, it's on page 21. It's in the middle of the paragraph that starts with the Asian Pacific Minnesotans Council.
Okay, do members have any questions? All right. Then you were going to tell us a little bit about the guidelines for establishing bills and amending boards.
yes, Madam Chair, this is the last item on the agenda.
Oh, wait, did I skip something? I'm sorry. Overview of local government structure. That was going to be. Did you did that already? Or you?
Oh, nope.
I'm
yet,
sorry.
Madam Chair.
I skipped over you. Sorry.
Madam
sorry,
Chair.
Ms. Dangle.
thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, other major entities we'll be hearing from for the local government piece. The biggest thing would probably be the Metropolitan Council and some of their subsidiaries. We'll be hearing almost all of those bills with the exception of anything that might have to do with Metro Transit, which may end up in the Transportation Committee. And then anything from cities, counties, towns, those sorts of things that don't necessarily get grouped into categories will come before this committee as well. And so my intent was just to go give you all a brief overview of local government, some of the terminology, some of the structures, briefly how they work, because I know it's a new subject area to a lot of people. This is just a very high-level overview. If you have questions, feel free to flag me down in the middle, ask me later, and I'm happy to do a more detailed presentation or talk to any of you in more detail if that's helpful. The first thing to start off with is what actually is a local government. And when you hear the word local government, most people usually think, oh, that's a city, a town, a county, something like that. But it could be more. It could include watershed districts, school districts, the Met Council, and all sorts of other local boards and councils. So it's important to know what you're talking about when you say local government. If you write a bill applying to all local governments, but you really only mean counties, it's a good idea to say that. Just a note on terminology. And it's the same thing with municipalities and public corporations and all of those other terms. There isn't a single definition. It can mean different things depending on which bill you're reading. For today's purpose, I'll just talk about counties, cities, and towns. And while they have similar powers, for example, all of them can pass ordinances and regulate their population, they are different in the way that they're set up and in some of the powers that they have. And I would also note that cities and towns are actually different legal entities, even though people commonly interchange the words. So it's important to know which one you're looking at. Now, briefly talking about counties, there are 87 counties in Minnesota, and they act through their county boards and their elected department heads. As far as cities, there's 853 cities, and they act through their city council. And cities are a little bit more complicated in their setup than counties are. There are two kinds of cities. There's statutory cities and charter cities or home rule charter cities. And you'll hear those terms on and off if you haven't already. Statutory cities operate under a statutory chapter in Minnesota law. It's chapter 412, and that's where you find a lot of their powers and responsibilities. They can further break down into organizational plans, but we won't go into that today because it's just another level of detail that I don't want everybody to get bogged down on. But if you have questions about that, we can talk about it. The other thing is a charter city. And there are about 100 charter cities in the state, and they are different because they're allowed to adopt a charter. And what a charter is I'd compare it to a local constitution. It gives them more discretion to govern themselves, to give them powers that they don't necessarily find in statute and those sorts of things. And finally, cities can be classified based on their population, and those are called classes. The first class city, there's only four of those, and those are 100,000 people or more. And there's a breakdown in the memo that that is in your packets. A fourth class city is 10,000 people or less, and that's the vast majority. It's 758 cities. So when you're looking at classes of cities, most of the cities in the state fall under that fourth class. There are 1,785 towns in the state. And towns are unique in that they act both through their town board and the town residents called town electors. In some situations, the town board can't act without permission of the town electors or vice versa. So that's a very unique aspect of town government. Towns can be unorganized, and that's the areas of the state that have no local government. They're not a town, a city. So they are an unorganized township. An organized township is a geographical area that has incorporated as a town, and urban towns are a type of organized town. Many of them found around the metropolitan area, and they have additional powers that some of the other towns do not have. And I will also mention Dillon's Rule by name, just because sometimes...
Could I just ask you a question? Yes. By town, are you talking about a township?
Yes.
Is that a different entity?
No.
That's the same thing.
Yes, Madam Chair. They're the same, used interchangeably.
Okay.
I'll mention Dillon's Rule because we may hear debates about that. Those of you that were hearing the Magic Act last year may remember this conversation. Dillon's Rule basically states that local governments only have the powers that are given to them by statute or implied by statute that's necessary to carry out their conferred powers. So what this boils down to is when you're looking at what a city, county, or town can do, the question is, where does it say that they can do this? The question that I often get asked, which isn't necessarily the right question in this state, is where does it say we can't? Mm-hmm. So you're always looking for that explicit or implied power. And just to touch briefly on special laws and local approval, and this could be a whole hearing in and of itself, so I'll just hit the high points here. We'll see a lot of special laws probably in this committee for local governments coming to ask the legislature to do something that statute doesn't currently allow. And the special law applies usually only to that county or city or maybe a couple of them. When we get these bills before us, after if it's approved and signed by the governor, it will go back to the local governments, and then they have to approve it through their governing body as well before it may take effect. And the memo that's in your packets has a list of some of the relevant statutory chapters. Unfortunately, local government law isn't neatly all piled in one chapter. It's sort of scattered throughout. And there are also a list of websites for the different associations and some state agencies that can give you more information on local government. And of course, I'm happy to answer any questions here or later that the committee may have.
Great. Any questions for Ms. Stengel? Yes. This is... Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Would a special law be such as the liquor law, where they need to have add another license to, say they have one municipal and they want to add another? Would that be an example of a special law?
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, yes, that's a common example.
Thank you.
We don't typically have jurisdiction, though, over the liquor laws. That goes to Commerce Committee. And welcome, Senator Hayden. Would you just like to introduce yourself?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I am Jeff Hayden. I'm the state senator in Senate District 62, which is in South Minneapolis, and I'm glad to be here.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Stengel? All right. Then, following our agenda, Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to talk a little bit about what should be included in a bill that establishes a new board or commission or council or task force. And by way of introduction, I'll just talk a little bit about what all these entities really are. They're all groups of multi-members that are formed to provide expertise and or focused efforts on a particular topic or issue. Our state government has dozens and dozens of them, probably between 150 and 200. I don't have an exact count. Most of these groups are organized under the executive branch, and we call them executive branch agencies. Some of them are organized under the legislative branch, like the legislative commissions. Most of these groups are formed through legislation, although they can be appointed by the governor and they can be organized through an agency. A little bit about the labels: board, commission, council, task force. For our purposes today, going through these guidelines, the distinctions don't matter. There are distinctions, definitions in statute, in section 15.012, but we do not use those labels completely consistently. So it's a good idea to try to use them as they're defined, but
if you'll be thrown off if you expect those words to always mean exactly what they're supposed to. For today, I'll just use the word board to refer to all of these kinds of groups. When a board is created in legislation, that legislation will be within the jurisdiction of this committee, as we just talked about, to review how the board is set up and whether or not the proper details are in the legislation to get the board up and running and for it to do its work. These guidelines came about as a result of the woes of the Sesquicentennial Commission. In 2005, the Sesquicentennial Commission was established to prepare the state for its celebration of its 150th anniversary of statehood in 2008. But the commission had quite a bit of difficulty getting going. Mm-hmm. They weren't granted a sufficient appropriation to do what was tasked of them in their duties. There were a few specifics in the legislation that created them about how they should get started, about who could convene their meetings, and how they were supposed to go about their business. And so they got a fair amount of bad press and whatnot in their first couple of years, as they accomplished nowhere near what was expected of them. And they had to come back to the legislature and get amendments to their legislation to get them situated to be able to do their work. And as a result of that experience, the State Government Committee, chaired at that time by Senator Rest, developed guidelines to be used when this sort of legislation is put into effect. So we'll go through the guidelines that you have in your packet, and I'm just going to point out high points here. The name of the group, it's important to come up with a name that hasn't been used before, and it's ideal if it has an acronym that isn't one that we're also using. And that's not necessarily easy to do, but it's worth a shot. The legislation should identify the total number of members. It should be very clear about who appoints each of the members. Senate confirmation is something that would be only a rare occurrence, but it sometimes exists. Number five is a convening authority. The legislation should identify who has the power to call the first meeting. And perhaps also who is to be the chair. That would probably typically be the same person for the first meeting, an acting chair, until the group elects its own chair. Compensation and expenses for members. We have a statute that fills in some provisions for membership and closing vacancies in one of these groups. It's 15.059. That statute also includes a provision for compensating members at a rate of $55 a day plus expenses, and those expenses can include child care costs. So it's important if you either choose to compensate members or choose to fill in with that 15.059 that there be an appropriate appropriation to cover those expenses if you've authorized them. Subpoena power. Legislative commissions that are composed only of legislatures do have subpoena power, but if the legislation is silent about subpoena power, then there isn't any. The duties of the group should be spelled out fairly specifically. You will get out of the group what you've asked of them, and so you want to be sure that what you were hoping to get from their expertise and focused efforts is what they deliver. The next item is accountability. That is typically the result that you would like from the group, and it's often a report delivered by a certain date to whoever specified. Usually it's to the chairs of the appropriate standing committees and to the majority leader of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. And setting a deadline is important. If the group is trying to make recommendations to the legislature for action by the legislature, you want to ask them to provide draft legislation to accomplish what they have in mind. A sunset date for the commission, for the board, should be identified. Right now, the Sunset Act, Chapter 3D, sets sunset dates for existing commissions and boards. And when we put a new board into place, we put it into the rotation in the Sunset Commission Act. An appropriation, as I mentioned, the Sesquicentennial Commission had problems because its appropriation was insufficient for the duties. So it's important that the appropriation match the amount of work that you expect from the group. Staffing, I'm going to skip down to 14, staffing for the group.
Again, it may be important to accomplish the duties that you've specified for the group to have adequate staff. And again, that's an appropriation. And in some cases, existing resources like the Commissioner of Administration can provide resources to the board that you set up. And then meetings is another element that you might specify in the legislation, either the minimum number of times that it's required to meet and what membership they need for a quorum. And then the last item in your packet is sort of a template of legislation for establishing a working group or a board or a commission that's useful if you're setting one up yourself. But as I mentioned, legislation that sets up a new board will come before this commission, and it'll be the task of this committee to review that legislation to make sure that it's properly set up.
So I think it's going to be a good idea for us, if authors do introduce bills establishing a new board or commission, that they hear from us with the guidelines. I mean, these are very helpful. Senator Rust and her committee developed these. I was on it. And it's a lot of things to think about. And if the author does their work ahead of time, it's much easier for us. Otherwise, I just remember being on Senator Betzel's committee going, why is this report due on December 31st? Nobody's around on December 31st. We should make it due December 1st or January 15th when somebody's actually there to receive the report. And why are we making somebody work over Christmas and New Year's to complete this report? So now, you know, when you have some really good guidelines, and all, some of these boards can't even get started because there's no convening authority, you know, to kind of call the first meeting to get things organized and notify people. So, yeah, this is very, very, very helpful work that was done in the past. So any other, you're finished with your presentation?
Madam Chair, I am. I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions from anyone? Well, I hope our committee will always be so efficient. Yes, yes, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, my question is in regards to the committee guidelines. Mm-hmm. I see timelines in there for getting amendments in and letting the CA know about testifiers. Are there any guidelines in regards to posting of bills prior to committee hearings, or is there a target that the committee is going to have so that members can read the legislation or be prepared for the committee ahead of time?
When we announce what bills are going to be heard?
Yeah, just knowing what the agenda is for the committee. Ahead of time. Are there guidelines that we're going to have for that?
We have overall guidelines in the rules. I think that's 3 days notice for the public and members to know. We certainly can provide more notice if we know. I mean, sometimes we don't know what bills are going to be introduced. And then, you know, typically if there are a lot of bills introduced, then you can plan ahead. But if there aren't so many bills introduced, we may have bill introductions on day. We meet Mondays and Wednesdays. Unlikely that we would hear it on Wednesday. We probably wouldn't hear it till the following week. So you would have good notice, a week notice.
Great.
For them.
Thank you.
But I think our overall guidelines is we should give at least 3 days notice. And you can always check with our office. You know, we're happy to provide you with information. You know, I'm sure Ms. Josephson will do that. She's nice.
Great.
Yeah. Senator Goodwin.
To expand on that a little bit, if a bill has to be introduced and heard without the 3-day notice, then does this amendment rule change the 24 hours in advance amendment rule? For example, we may only get 24 hours in advance if something has to be heard towards the end or the committee deadlines. And then my question is, if we don't get the 3 days notice, then will we be able to introduce amendments just before the meeting?
Yes, these are just guidelines.
Okay.
They're not dyed-in-the-wool rules. And what we want to know is we want to know about the witnesses who are coming in. So in case there are changes, they can be notified ahead of time. Generally, we have policies that say, you know, people from out of town get to present their testimony first in case they have travel issues or because of the weather, or people who make special trips, and citizens will often be invited to go first over lobbyists who live in the area and are here all the time, just as a courtesy for them.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, on what's today, Monday? On Wednesday, we are going to be the first committee to hear Senate File 1, the Health Insurance Exchange. And so please be on time because they have a very tight schedule on that bill. It has to go to 7 committees or more. Could be more finance divisions that it gets referred to. So it's starting with us, and we're going to try to stick to our jurisdiction only, which is the establishment of the board, basically.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Stengel.
And then also some rulemaking issues.
And some rulemaking, right. But we'll be taking testimony, so if you know of anyone who wants to testify on those segments of the bills. And then when it goes to commerce, they'll look at those issues. And when it goes to health, they'll look at those issues. And it's going to finance, and it's going to taxes, and it's going to a lot of committees. Oh. Great. Any other questions, comments, issues? All right. Thank you very much, then. The meeting stands adjourned.